Hey, Twim Nation, Jeff here. We are very excited to be celebrating the Christmas season with you, and during this time of reflection and renewal and all that good stuff, we thought it was fun to look back on some of our old days and how far we've come in 7 years of doing Twim. Many of you have been with us for the entire time. Many of you have not. You might be newer. So we figured what could be more exciting and fitting to make that a reality than by letting you hear our very first episode, an episode that was such a mess, we actually had to go back and record it all over again after the first time we did it, because we knew so little about even audio technology. Anyway, very first episode of Twim, it was called The 30-Foot Temple. We released it in mid-January in 2010, so, and it's only like half an hour long, because we were amazing back then, and we're not so long-winded, and yeah. Per usual, I'm dragging this out. Anyway, we hope you enjoy, and Merry Christmas. Well, hello there, and welcome to This Week in Mormons. Thank you very much for joining us for our lively discussion. My name is Jeff.
And I'm Al, and we are bringing you This Week in Mormons. You're probably wondering, what is This Week in Mormons? Well, there's kind of a rash of This Week in shows going around, and we wanted to jump in there for the throw our hat into the Mormon crowd. And we think that there's a lot of stories and political issues and movements and different things that will affect the Mormon community and, you know, the church itself and the members. And we wanted to be able to kind of bring that together in a quick, succinct show that you could listen to and digest in a half hour or so. And so we're jumping in and excited to do so. I'm here with my buddy Jeff, and we are just ecstatic to be talking Mormons.
I am your buddy Jeff. Here I am.
There he is. So we have a whole agenda of stuff to talk about this week, and
we do actually. Yes, so this week, what we will be discussing: a new Mormon battalion monument in San Diego, and church technology, the Phoenix Temple, and issues surrounding that. Also, obesity, religiosity, Christendom, and how that affects Utah and your weekend. Those are the things that we will be discussing. Those are the things we will be discussing today. So I believe Al's going to kick us off here.
Obesity and Christianity. It's the best headline you could possibly hope for. We have the whole conservative right going with us.
They're meat eaters. They're okay with it.
Oh, they're all about it. Hey, I'm all
about it. We love our
red
meat.
What am I talking about? I played football. So let's see. Where were we? The Mormon Battalion. Yeah, so this came out just this morning in the LDS newsroom. The Mormon Battalion center or headquarters site down in San Diego has has rededicated. Apparently, they've rebuilt the entire center. Now, I've been there. I'm kind of a Mormon Battalion buff. I enjoy the history of the Mormon Battalion, and truth be told, in full disclosure here, I am a holder of the Mormon Battalion badge. From scouting. Oh yeah, you know, it's not.
I am convinced that merit badge does not exist.
It's not a merit badge, but it does exist. I assure you, because the requirements were something like you had to go and sleep out on the trail of the Mormon Battalion trail and eat food that they would have eaten. Something kind of quirky like that, and I had to dress like a pioneer and wear a side bag instead of my backpack. It was kind of odd. But
so it's basically the wilderness survival merit badge, while reading your scriptures.
Except the Mormon Battalion Trail parallels I-70 through Kansas, and so it was much easier than a wilderness survival badge. We just we just pulled the car off into a rest stop and called that. I've been to the Mormon Battalion Center a couple of times. It was, you know, it's kind of nifty. They just had a map and stuff up there. But from what I can tell from this article, it looks like they've made it quite a bit more interactive, a little bit more technologically advanced, kind of borrowing some props from the Disneyland world, I think. And the issue I wanted to kind of, well, not really an issue, but the main point I wanted to highlight out of this is just kind of the church's embracing of technology. You know, for a long time, it was kind of a resistant culture. You know, the church as a whole didn't really embrace technology. They wanted to be late adopters rather than early adopters or even normal adopters. They wanted to be very late to the game to make sure that the technology had defined itself in the market before they took it into any kind of role within the church or within its organization. And so to see this, you know, to see the church kind of move in that direction with these sites of making them more interactive, more using more tech in the displays and stuff, I'm not sure if it says that the church is adopting earlier or if the advances in technology are becoming less dramatic. But I think we're definitely seeing an improvement or a picking up of the pace overall as a whole, you know, of technology by the church, which is kind of exciting, I think.
I think it is also very exciting. All too often, I agree that it's often felt like the church is pretty far behind as far as technological stuff. And I felt that way for a long time, really only until recent years they seem to have picked up the pace quite a bit.
Well, because when I was a younger guy, I worked in the office, you know, like doing the membership records and stuff for our ward. And there's quite a bit of just, you know, the technology that we had was like 1400 baud modems until the year 2000. I mean, they wouldn't submit records with anything over broadband or DSL. They just didn't want to do that. It was all this archaic, ancient technology, it felt like. And so to finally be coming into our own, using broadband to submit records and transfer people around. Oh, it's pretty impressive. It's exciting.
Well, it's wonderful. And aside from that, I remember I've worked in a capacity where I've been in the office as well. And membership records or counting tithing or whatever. I mean, before MLS existed, which I'm sure you've used, it was this really like tedious system for doing everything. It made no sense. It was essentially like using DOS to try to do all the church work without any kind of great like user interface to do anything.
You get on the church BBS board and
yeah. Well, you might have to explain to our lay listeners what a BBS board is.
BBS was the pre-internet days where you could host like a little mini interwebs.
Yeah, what is that? I forgot what BBS stands for, though.
I have no idea.
You have no idea?
I hosted one, and I had my shotgun modems connected to each other.
I remember. It just means bulletin board system.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
It was effectively just a chat room, basically. Anyway, yeah, but the church has embraced technology at a great level.
Well,
I love that.
Not too long ago, I sat in with the church's CTO in a kind of a broad forum type discussion, and first I was pretty surprised the church had a CTO.
The church has a chief technology officer.
That's apparently
who knew.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I wonder what I wonder if the Catholic Church has a technology division, but I don't know.
I watched 20 minutes of Angels and Demons the other day, and because
enough to convince you, Jeff.
No, the file was corrupted, so I gave up trying to watch the movie. Yes, I am convinced. They go deep in the Vatican, and Tom Hanks is sitting there with high-tech computers and stuff with the Vatican police. So I believe they embrace technology. And then they burn, what is it, blue smoke from the Sistine Chapel, which is great, too. So,
So we have our own technology officer, probably not as deep underground as the Vatican's throes of technology that you see in Angels and Demons, but we've got a technology officer all the same. Well, and the stuff that he was bringing up was stuff that was fairly cutting edge, but you know, his comment was that the church as a whole wouldn't be able to adopt it until, well, really, like I said earlier, until the technology had defined itself. Because really, you know, one, this shouldn't be a surprise, but I doubt we're going to see the church tweeting anytime soon or, you know, even Facebook. I wonder if there's an official church app. I doubt it. I highly doubt it.
No, well, this is what you and I were talking about this before. That's something I would love to see, because as the world is going mobile on their mobile phones, as everyone's got a smartphone nowadays and everything, I would love to see an app for the church stuff that serves all the same needs as LDS.org, which has become a You laugh, but think LDS.org has become a really, really useful website in recent years. I mean, they've made it they've redone the layout. They've made it far more intuitive. Now you have the Mormon videos.
Well, I'm thinking of like the Apple commercial. It's like, need to write a talk for sacrament meeting? There's an app for that.
Yeah. And then all the Android users will get on about how like Apple's horrible and everything. But I would love to see something like that, because there are a lot of random applications that exist that perform some of those functions. Like, I have one app on my phone that's a word list thing, and I can go to my website and export the word list into my phone and use that. There's another application I use that called the Reveal Reader, which can give me all of the scriptures and conference talks and like anything I want. But it would be cool if you had an actual church sanctioned application.
It might have all that same functionality. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, that's what I'm saying. I would just love something with all that functionality, whether it's to search the whole church database for talks, for the current issue of the Ensign, or past issues, meeting house locators, whatever. You know, just an all-encompassing app for the church.
I think I agree to an extent, but really, if I had a wish list, it would be that the church would open up its platform a little bit and let developers kind of develop with their the media that they have on the site. You know, I just think that there's significantly better developers out there than what the church would sanction itself. And so if they would, you know, if they could open up some of the access to the site so that developers could develop around that material freely, I think we'd see a lot better applications come out, you know, a lot better stuff like that. And so if I had a wish list, that would be it. I can almost guarantee that won't happen. But
the church takes the Apple approach to its content, not the Google approach.
Right. Close it up and control the message. That's true.
Which is understandable, because obviously we can't have, you know, we can't have the whims of man guiding church functions. Obviously, we are guided by revelation. So.
Well, and that makes sense though, because you know, if you open it up to developers that are developing good apps, you're also going to have developers developing crummy apps, and you don't want, you know, in the end, you don't want a user to get an experience or to have an experience where they're trying to access the church's material and have the app kind of solely the experience and ruin that.
Definitely.
So I don't know. It's the catch-22, but still, I would love to have some open access to pulling that media down and formatting it how I see fit.
It'd be great. And I just love the general approach the church is taking when it seemed like for so long we were afraid to embrace technology.
Right.
Even in the smallest way. Like, I'd sit there and go, like, when are they just going to put some of the videos on DVD? You know, after DVD was well established as the medium for delivering video.
Or do you remember the church's, like, the translation stuff they used to have back in the day for when you'd be in a multilingual ward? And it was like the headsets with the full-on 3-foot antennas and the guy up in the front with the big old mask thing talking into it.
I don't know that I ever had that. I did have on my mission, we had some remote headsets that you just turned to a certain frequency and then you turned a microphone to a certain frequency. But we just sat in the back and translated into English.
Oh, they're super slick now, but back in the day, it was this huge, huge operation.
Yeah.
And you sit there and watch it, you're just like, I know we've got better technology than this. Why are we still living in 1978? This doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I agree. Either way, though, it's good to see that now we are trying to do a lot more with that. I mean, even finally, at the level of, you know, of the apostleship, I remember Elder Ballard gave a talk a while ago.
Year and a half ago,
don't quote me on that, but in the immediate past, discussing the importance that we can do as members, as member missionaries, and using new technology to further the work of the church. And I remember that distinctively because I swear it was the first time I ever heard something coming from somewhere like a general authority in general conference discussing why it was important for us to utilize Twitter and Facebook and all these things to blog and to network and to further the work of the church rather than letting all of that be an impediment to the church's growth.
So, I do remember that was a monumental day when I heard Elder Ballard say the word Facebook and thought, oof, Zuckerberg, lucky man.
Oh, you Zuckerberg, you got apostles calling you out now.
Well, I don't know. They didn't really give much guideline on how to do that. I think it's interesting, too. I mean, there's a lot of the... I wonder how helpful some of these blogs are, you know, or even a program like this, you know, it's how helpful is this? Like, did the Did they
good
really?
Good job, Al. Sink our boat before it is even sinking.
Well,
very good.
I'm not saying that it's bad, but like I wonder if you know, just the more openness around the church is kind of what they had in mind, because that's I think that's more the result more than anything. I don't think it's more direct like here you know everybody that listens to this should be baptized or everybody that reads my blog should join the church.
No, yeah,
it's more just kind of open communication. Let's let's remove some of the ambiguity and misunderstandings that persist through through keeping kind of a closed community around it.
Yeah, and I actually, while we were talking, I found the talk. Yeah, it was from the October 09 conference, so just a year ago.
Oh, bravo.
Yeah, I love the sections here. And look at this. When it's broken down, one section is called Blogging About the Church in Everyday Life, Creating Blogs About Full-Time Missionaries Using Other Online Forums. It's a strong medium for sharing testimony. So I think it's pretty interesting.
Did you see that? Have you seen that? There's a database now. I just got an invitation to it the other day, but there's a database of people that are archiving sacrament meeting talks. So you write a talk for sacrament meeting, you submit it to this database, and it becomes, they're trying to build kind of this library / repository of LDS-themed talks on various topics. Did you see that?
I don't believe I have, actually, no.
It was coming through on Facebook, I think. It was fairly big. They have 10,000 talks, I think, archived. But again, kind of an interesting idea of flooding keywords with content that you've controlled or created as a community, right?
Yeah, it's an interesting idea, and what I love that we have a chance to do this as church members. It's a great way for us to better utilize technology to further the message of the church and to further the understanding of what the church represents. Because oftentimes, whenever the church has gotten bad press, I think more than anything, it's because people just don't understand what the church actually is.
Sure.
And sadly, we still see that all the time today. And right now we're seeing a lot of this with the temple that's been announced in Phoenix. I don't know if you followed much about...
In Phoenix? No, I have.
Phoenix. Don't mock me. I love the Valley of the Sun. And I love each and every one of you listening to us from that valley. But you see, recently, it was a couple years ago, it was somewhat soon after President Monson, I don't want to say took office, but for lack of a better expression, he announced first temples in Gilbert and then in Gila Valley, Arizona. And Gilbert, of course, is like across the freeway from Mesa, so it was kind of interesting. It's like having a temple in Provo and in Orem, but whatever works. I fully trust Revelation. But it did leave the northwest part of the whole Phoenix Valley still without a temple where a lot of people live. So then they announced one shortly thereafter for Phoenix. The difference, though, is unlike Gilbert, where the temple has basically been rubber stamped because
there are many reasons,
but by and large, people regard Gilbert as kind of a Provo South. There's a substantial Mormon population.
Maybe Tooele. We could call it a Tooele.
It's a lot nicer than Tooele. It's Tooele minus the nuclear waste, which is a wonderful thing.
Sure.
Anyways, though, with the Phoenix thing, they've had a lot of opposition, and it reminds me a lot of when they built a temple in my native Orange County, California, about the Newport Beach Temple that we built there. The same thing happened. There was a lot of opposition. The residents didn't like the color. They didn't like the flood lighting. They didn't like the size, traffic concerns, what have you.
It's like when you're trying to break up in a relationship, and all of a sudden, everything's the problem.
Yes. That's exactly what it is.
It's like, everything, no, your lighting is bad. Oh, and the white. I hate white. You know I hate white.
Yeah, and so we know what happened with the Newport temple is eventually they had to, they changed the color. That's why it's kind of a salmon color. It's sandstone now. And they turned the lights off at like 10 o'clock. They lowered the steeple for one. So it's a little bit, it looks more like an old California mission, which thankfully works with the history of the region. So it's not like too awkward or anything like that.
Right.
But if you want to see what it's supposed to look like, look at a temple like Sacramento, which is of the same floor plan, but was basically the size as it was intended to be for Newport. And I'm not diminishing any of the importance of the temples. It's a huge blessing to have one close by. Having had to go to the Los Angeles temple before that, which is just like you sit in so much traffic going out there that all of the good spirit and goodwill you had building up for a temple for temple work is just gone by the time you get out to West L.A. So it's a huge blessing to be able to drive 20 minutes and be down there in minimal traffic. It's great. And it's wonderful. And now that I'm seeing what's happening here in Phoenix,
similar stuff, especially the big contentious issue here has been the height. And for any of you listening, you might be more familiar with this than we are. You might live in the area. I know it's up on a hill. It's in far north Phoenix. A lot of people have griped that it blocks an important view.
You've painted a word picture for me, Jeff. I have it in my mind.
So it's supposed to be, it's too tall, apparently. And that's because the maximum height allowed for zoning, for residential zoning, is a 30-foot building. Now, most of the time, the churches use the little caveat that religious buildings are exempt from this, and oftentimes that's upheld. I've generally always seen that to be upheld.
Right.
And though when they have relented and still made temples smaller, it's to appease the population like they did in Newport Beach. Legally, they could have made it tall, but they decided for the sake of, you know, PR, like, let's meet people halfway. Because, you know, the funny thing with temples, right, is that we know they're divinely inspired. But I don't know how well it works when you go into a planning commission meeting and explain to them the temple has to be this way.
No, Mayor, you don't understand.
No, Mayor, you don't understand. This is, I mean, we know this is true, but of course this is a struggle in that obviously not everyone is required to share our belief and understanding of modern revelation.
Right.
So they often relent. They did that with Newport. And now it seems that the church is trying to make the building in Phoenix 40 feet.
Well, isn't this like the third time they're coming back to this, though? I mean, is it that the community keeps asking them to change, or are they coming to a compromise? Is the church countering the offer?
I don't know how well they're countering. It appears, from what I've been reading about it anyway, that the church originally wanted 40 feet. Like, I don't think they were shooting for a 60-foot building or anything like that. Like, they wanted a 40-foot building, and people have been up in arms about it. But the church has still gone ahead, and Phoenix Planning Commission approved it and everything. That's fine. So they were going to go ahead. But then they've had enough signatures from the residents to challenge the church's building of the temple in an election to say it has to be 30 feet because of zoning rules.
Ah, beauty.
So the church, in an effort to avoid an expensive election and also, you know, all the bad press that would come because of something like that. I mean, who wants to have the construction of a temple challenged, not just in court, but in an election? You know, like, you're going to have people vote. Can the Mormons build their temple or not?
And then you have all the drama of, like, well, you bust people in from Gilbert. Yeah, you know.
Yeah, I know. So as of right now, the church, I guess, has said they'll take it down to 30 feet. And I don't know how much back on the drawing table that means every.
So that's like the size of a Taco Bell. That's great.
Roughly, yes. And if I see, yeah, there's a little, at azcentral.com, there's an older article here that I pulled up just for a diagram they show of the proposed temple design, which would go all the way up to 126 feet with the spire. Spires are exempt from zoning laws. And then it shows, you know, the typical neighborhood church is supposed to be like 22 feet high or something like that. And a single-story residence is like 13 feet tall. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there.
We'll put that in the show notes so that our listeners can see it. But no, that is...
Yeah. One of the... Oh, go ahead, Al.
It seems a little absurd that there'd be so much resistance to a temple coming into your community, particularly around the fact that time after time, I mean, the community is the one that's really benefited from this. I mean, the church gets a temple there, but in the community, wherever the temple ends up, I mean, it's the housing prices go up. I mean, your value goes up. You're bringing in a high caliber of people. It's not like you're putting in a bar or a strip club or something where you're worried about, you know, how late are you going to be bringing riffraff in and, you know, the noise and yada, yada, yada. We'd like to build a sanctuary in your community where people can come and reflect and find peace in their lives. And it's like, no, that is not what we want.
And the funny thing is oftentimes residents have huge concerns about traffic, which is understandable. But again, it's not understanding. I mean, temples really... Aside from their open house, it's a minimal traffic issue when you get down to it. If you really wanted to protest at one of our church buildings for traffic reasons, you would want to protest the construction of an actual meeting house.
Right. Wednesday nights and Sunday mornings.
Because those are the ones that have this regular flow of a substantial amount of people at one time. People don't get that a temple session, you know, you have
30 people.
Most of them nowadays, 30 or 40 people coming in at a time. But usually temples are not major problems for traffic at all. It's very chill.
I think In-N-Out would be a bigger problem than a temple.
And I believe for our Utah listeners, In-N-Out is a bigger problem right now. Because they are rejoicing to finally have that double-double sinking into their teeth.
It's the animal style that puts it over the top.
teeth sinking into the double double. Either way, there are sinking teeth are involved.
Speaking of sinking teeth and double doubles, let's move right into our favorite tagline of the.
There was one more thing I wanted to get to about this Temple thing.
Oh, but that segue was perfect.
No, we'll go back to it. We'll redo it.
Okay,
we'll just redo it.
Okay, what do you got?
I don't know. The point is, one thing that makes me think about this with the Temple is whenever there's opposition to these, it's usually from a group of people or from whomever that already have a preconceived notion about the church. So it makes me wonder how much of it is legitimate concern for what the Temple will be, you know, whether it'll, you know, ruin property values or traffic.
Wait, you mean like how much of it is resistance to the church, or how much of it is resistance to a temple?
I think a lot of it is not as much resistance to what the building is and how it stands to impede their way of life as much as it's an excuse to go after the church for something.
Well, I think that's that's not entirely unreasonable either, because there's some pretty ridiculous misconceptions out there that I think one, and just perceptions that people have where one I can think in my in my case with some other religions, I'd be a little bit hesitant to them coming in because I'd be like, wait a minute. So, yeah. I mean, not entirely crazy, but for the most part, I think history speaks to this, that once a temple goes in or a meeting house goes in, I mean, the experience is fairly pleasant. I mean, like, there's nothing bad about the structure or, you know, the people or anything of that nature. I mean,
I just think it seems that when temples go up in places where the church is not nearly as known, places I've been, whether you're talking like Europe and Asia, where many people just think we're Jehovah's Witnesses or whatever, there's I've never seen that much opposition to anything because people aren't even aware of what the church is. So they just go, yeah, some like church buildings going up here, whatever.
Well,
like, they don't even think about it.
And their local church buildings are like, you know, like a Pravoslavnik church or something. I mean, it's just this massive monstrosity.
Yeah. So then they sink their teeth into
which brings us to our next story. No. So I came across a graph of this was actually through a social network.
Is this how teeth sinking works with it?
No, I gave up. Our tagline was Christianity and obesity. I mean, it really grabs the attention. Christianity and obesity. What are fat Christians doing now? But, which leads me to Mississippi. But, no, I'm just kidding. There's a graph that ranks religiousness and then, well, each state by religiousness, and then correlates other columns like average IQ, murder rate, theft, divorce rate, health and contentment ranking, percent who are conservative, obesity, all those things. And I came across it through a social networking site called Digg, which I don't know how many of you know that. It's kind of a weird place to find anything religious. But I thought it was interesting because there were a couple of things that stood out to me when looking at this graph. And I'll put it in the show notes so that you guys can take a look at it yourselves if you want. But first, Utah is not ranked number one most religious state, which is funny to me because if you asked anybody on the street, what do you think is the most religious state? People would either say Utah right off, or if you phrase the question, you know, what do you think of when you think of Utah, they'd say religion.
Definitely.
It's just the obvious thing, but it's ranked 14th on a list behind all of the Bible Belt: Mississippi, Alabama, South Carolina, Tennessee, Arkansas, on down, even Kentucky, Texas, West Virginia, Kansas, then finally comes in Utah. But it ranks, so far as IQ goes, it ranks significantly, well, pretty, a little bit higher than its nearest competitors, and then significantly higher than like Mississippi and Alabama, the most religious states. And then you can keep going over, and it just keeps being interesting. Murder rate, obviously, I think that's predictable, very low. Occurrences of theft, very low, well, medium. Divorce rate, pretty low, which is, well, no,
back
what is
up
it?
For
a four,
second.
It's average, which is kind of a surprise. Kansas beat it on divorce rate. And
why do you say, unsurprisingly, Utah's murder rate is low?
Well, you know, there's just not a lot to murder for in Utah. Everybody,
Are you nuts? There's fry sauce. You could take the fry sauce industry.
Outside of their traffic and their road rage, I've never seen such angry drivers as in Utah.
You really think they're that angry in Utah? I've never found them to be angry in Utah, and this is not to alienate anyone listening from Utah. I always found them to be not as much road rage as much as, like, unaware in some ways.
No, I've seen road rage, man. There's fire in some women's eyes that, like,
yeah,
hateful anger.
The one thing, now any of you listening can confirm or deny this, put in your two cents. I think that the one thing I always notice is Utahns don't know how to merge when you're on the freeway to save their life.
Well, maybe I'm confusing them because I see them merging as very aggressively. See,
maybe it's that. Yeah, I think that's what it is. Like, they could easily, like, let you in, and instead they're always cutting you off, trying to jump ahead, blah, 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 blah.
See, that's what I'm saying. That is what I'm saying. But anyway.
Isn't it funny then that on the list you have, Utah is number one in the country for the health and contentment ranking?
They are the most content and healthy. That's true. Well, and then you go from there. So number one in that. And then then you go with all the above ranking states in religiousness, though, and their health and contentment ranking is like a 50. It's like very, very low. You go to Mississippi, you're not healthy or content, but you're very religious. So I don't know. I'm not sure what the correlation is, particularly that we're drawing.
I don't
out
know
there.
If there's any. Yeah, well, I don't think we're insinuating anything. It's just kind of interesting data. It just seems like Utah bucks the trend of many of the other ones where they're highly religious based on this study.
Yeah.
That's why it just seems that some of the findings later on, after the religiousness, buck more of the trend, and it's almost that Utah shares more in common with some of
the better quality of life.
Yeah, like the quality of life indexes for a lot of the ones that are, like, less religious, which is
right.
When you add these things together. So it's just it's kind of an anomaly. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
All hail Utah. All hail Utah. It is a wonderful place. Yeah, I think it's fascinating stuff. And in our dear Utah, many of you may be aware that, yes, dear Utahns, and this has become kind of the Utah show. I don't really know why. This is not about Utah culture.
Neither Jeff or I are from Utah, for the record.
Nor will we ever be from Utah. But Utah, of course, just about a week and a half ago now, you get another temple in Utah. So I'm clapping for you. Congratulations.
Bravo. Well done.
You get another temple in Utah. They have really just taken the bull by the horns.
It's going in the suburbs of Monticello, if I remember right.
Not Monticello.
Moab, maybe. Moab will get a temple.
They already have one in Monticello, Al. See, Al was asking me why. Why did Monticello get a temple? And I have the answers.
Yeah, it's true, but we're not talking about Monticello today, Jeff.
Yeah, but right now I kind of feel like making you look bad, so I'm going to explain it. It was basically that Monticello was the first temple, the template temple for those mini temples we started building around 1999, and that's why they got one.
But that's still no excuse. I mean, why not put the mini temple in Payson where you could keep an eye on it?
Because they didn't need it then, but today.
But Monticello did a community of like 1,000 people. There's no.
It serves a greater region, sir. It's not just for Monticello. It's not like you have to show your residency card, and if you're from somewhere else close to Monticello, you can't go to the temple.
There's no one in Monticello though. That's like putting a temple in North Dakota.
I don't know if there is one in North Dakota.
Of course, there's not. There's no one in North Dakota.
No, there's not, but there also aren't any members of the church in North Dakota, whereas, hello, happy land of Utah, yes, it does have members.
All right, well, so anyway.
It does have members. Look, you got Monticello out there, you got Blanding, you know, you got, all. You got, dude, you've got like, it's like hot town USA out there.
I stand corrected. I redact my statement.
It is hot town USA out there in Monticello, so bless them.
I believe you pass a Little America hotel and gas station on the way there.
You pass happiness while you're there. That's what you do. Pure, unadulterated joy for everyone. So before Al started ripping on southeastern Utah, I was going to mention that yes, Payson, of course, does get a temple now. Good old Payson gets a temple. And this is wonderful news for the people of Payson. I've wondered about this for some time from my time at BYU.
Didn't you call this back in the day? I remember you predicting.
I don't know. I don't know as much as I called it, but I did. I thought out loud and said, yeah, you know, Southern Utah County, that neck of the woods is growing a lot and Provo's really full. And I figured if they ever built a temple in Southern Utah County, it would go in Payson.
You observed, I see.
Because Payson is pretty much the bigger city in that. Maybe Spanish Fork's bigger, but Payson's farther down. It wouldn't make sense to put it in Spanish Fork. That's too close. So Payson's far enough down, but it's not so far down that you're like in Santa Quinn, you know.
Oh, Santa Quinn with the scones.
Isn't
Gary Coleman from Santa Quinn?
I don't know where Gary Coleman. No, I think Gary Coleman's from somewhere else, but I think now he lives in Orem. That's the myth anyway. I don't really know. I don't know. But I think it's interesting. Yeah, we get another temple in Utah, and it's been interesting that for a long time, you know, after Monticello and I guess Vernal. Utah had a good stretch there where it seemed like they were kind of built out on temple building in Utah.
I apologize for not knowing that, but I don't really know my geography of Utah that well. Where's Payson located in, like from Salt Lake?
It's south of Provo.
South of Provo still, okay.
It's in southern Utah County. So, because the way it is, most of the urbanization of the whole Wasatch Front, it's really mostly like Springville at the most, I would say, for as far as contiguous urbanization. You know, Springville to Provo, all the way up like through Ogden is when it's pretty much just like developed, that whole neck of that whole stretch, right?
Okay.
It's only when you get south of that where Spanish Fork is farther down the 15 to Payson, Santa Quinn. That place has been it's been booming for a long time. There are a lot more people there now than there used to be, and they keep building stuff. So it's down that neck of the woods. It's like next to Santa Quinn, your beloved Santa Quinn, sir.
Does Tooele have a temple?
Sadly, Tooele does not, but it does have my summer home. I bask in the glory of nuclear radiation.
Well, that's the I'm sure it's lovely there. I can't wait to see it someday. But I think we're all out of time for this week. We're hitting right around our 30-minute mark. So go ahead and wrap it up. But it's
been
fun. Yeah. It's fun to shoot the breeze and talk Mormondom for a good half hour. We're hoping that our listeners get something out of this, primarily around you know, us bringing together a lot of the stories and things that are out there that could be affecting. Well, they could be of interest, I guess would be a better way to say it, and putting it all into a 30-minute package. So we hope you guys enjoyed that, and we look forward to doing it more and more week after week.
Yeah, and Al, I don't recall. We want you all to contact us. You know, we want to have a discussion. So if you have contact, is it right now it's contact@thisweekinmormons.com.
Yep, and you can check out the show notes and kind of leave comments on it over at thisweekinmormons.com. And we'd love to hear some feedback. We enjoy doing this, and so we'd like to know what you guys think and suggestions. And if you find kind of news stories or tips that you'd like us to discuss on the show, go and send them our way again at contact at This Week in Mormons, and we'll try and work it in. So,
and please do your best to keep all news away from Utah.
We'll do better about keeping it or broadening the scope next week. But anyway.
Yeah. Anyway, well, thanks, Al. Thank you for your time. It's always fun. And thanks all for listening. So for Al, I'm Jeff, and this is This Week in Mormons.